community. What might we do differently? How might we take an opportunity of reflection to think about what might a different way of doing things look like? And I wanted to use the metaphor of a campfire, and I want to just read you a piece that comes from Ursula Le Guin, who not only is a science fiction writer, but she's a deep thinker about these things. And she asks, why are we huddling around the campfire? Why do we tell tales or tales about tales? Why do we bear witness, true or false? We might ask an Aaron or Primo Levi. We might ask Scheherazade or Virginia Woolf. Is it because we are so organized as to take actions that prevent our dissolution into the surroundings? And what I think she's raising for us there is we need to come together to tell the stories of us that help make us who we are, help shape us, allow people to hear them, whether they're true or false is not the issue for her in this quote. And it might be for some of us, but I'm interested to think about how that happens given the diversity of the community that we live in, the geographical spread, the range of ages, the sorts of issues that we know arise for people who may love, work, pray, grow up differently from their peers and have relationships that are that might not be quite what the Brady Bunch, for those of us who are old enough, taught us. So I'm interested in learning about who gets invited to sit around our campfires, who gets left out, whose story shapes the stories that are told around our campfires, and what stories are not permitted to be told. So I'm going to invite Amanda to first respond to that. Who gets invited to your campfire, Amanda?
Thanks, Kathleen. Who gets invited? I think I'm actually still thinking about the question that Ursula Le Guin asked, which is why do we bear witness? So I'm holding that as something to think about. But I guess as a women's health organisation, you might think that we're only asking about women. And but what we are asking about is women's stories and how they live in the community. And particularly at this point, we're asking, what's it like living with COVID? And we're asking women and men and gender diverse people about that. So we've been very, very broad in that moment. But in general, it's really important, I think, to understand what you're wanting out of the stories. So, it might be to hear a story, it might be to be entertained, it might be to think more deeply, and it might be, yeah, to be amused. And right now, and what Women's Health does is we want to hear the stories of how people are experiencing living in the community. So the invitation is for anyone in the community to come along and to talk and to share their stories. And the important bit, I think it's really interesting, are they true or not? Well, they're true for the person that's experiencing them. And I think that's a really important thing to think about. It's really easy to sort of go, well, that's not the way it happened. It's like, well, that's the way it happened for me. And that's the bit that we really want to hear. So I guess, why do we want to hear that? Why do we want to bear witness to that? And in this moment, the stories that we're wanting to gather are to help us work out what people's experiences are and how we can support change in the future, how we can think about strategies to make the world, to change the world and to have people experience things differently and in better ways. So I guess, the purpose is really important about the stories. And then so who am I inviting in to listen to those or to tell their stories? it and getting to everybody is really difficult. I think, you know, as you say, who's there but who's not there? Who's on the outer rim of the campfire? Who's not even seeing the flames? Who's not being a part of it? So one of the things that I've been doing is, and it's part of my role, and it's a really fantastic part of my role, is going out to different parts of the community, going out to different groups. And in this stage, this space, it's actually this sort of thing is talking online rather than face to face. We're connecting up with groups in the community that we've spoken with before and inviting them to come in to the campfire and to say, come be warm and sit around with us and tell us what's happening for you. I think one of the things that I've noticed, I've always been interested in storytelling, and I think one of the things that I've noticed is that there's a lot of people who think that their stories aren't worth telling. Mm-hmm. And that they will say, well, look, oh no, everyone thinks like that, so there's no point in me telling you because everybody thinks like that. And I think that's become more and more a phenomenon, because there are so many stories out there. You know, you just have to get on your internet and social media and there's 100,000 stories. One of the phenomena that happens is, though, people are attracted to like. So they hear the stories and they bounce around and everybody has a similar experience. So then it's like, well, my story is not unique. But, you know, that's in your group of people that you know. But what about this group over here? They may have a different experience. So your voice is really important. It's really important to hear what you individually have to say. And no one's going to have exactly the same experience as anyone else. So I think inviting people and showing them that their story is important is a really key part of gathering stories. And look, you're never going to get everyone's voice. There's a lot of reasons why you won't, but that's why it's great to have different people collecting stories in different ways. So I know Errol will talk about what he's doing. You know, there are other people in our region that are collecting stories as well. It's about then all the story collectors getting together and finding out what the themes are and what the stories are as well. So I guess, yeah, what I think it's really important to invite as many people as possible, to notice who's not there and to actively look. And know that you're not going to get everybody. And even the story collectors have their own experience and bring their own stories to it. So it may be that I'm not seeing some of the people that I need to be seeing. And so things like this gets the message out there. And other people on this call may know people who need to have their stories told, and they might come to Errol or me or someone else. It's a really iterative process, and I think often when people do share their own stories, then other people are encouraged to do that too. And I think it's a lovely feeling to know that you're not alone in your story. So being able to share in that way is really important as well. So, and I think that's, you know, again, I just go back to that quote, why do we bear witness? Because everybody's story is important. Everyone's is, and that's why I love stories. And in this particular project that we're working on at the moment, we've got a purpose for it, and we're inviting we're reaching out to invite as many people as possible. So yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's a couple of things that I think would be interesting to build on as we go through this hour, but. Errol, who gets invited to your campfire?
Okay, well, I really agree with Amanda in a lot of ways with everyone's story is important. And I should probably introduce where I work. I work at the Corryong Neighbourhood Centre, but I'm a youth worker at the Corryong Neighbourhood Centre. So we since January, there's a lot of stories in our community to tell, from bushfires to just how people are feeling, to COVID and onward like that. So as a community centre, everyone has an important story to tell, but I think it's what you get out of the stories which is important. That's why it's important everyone can talk about what's going on, because I think from my experience and from what I've seen with people coming in, everyone comes into the neighbourhood centre for a little job or a big job, whether it's printing or faxing to look at grants and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. But
they talk and they, during when you work with people, they talk to you because I think it's a great way for them to unpack how they're feeling. And this year there's not been a lot of chance, I think, for people to even breathe and think about how they're feeling or how the world's affecting them at the moment. So if you can create an environment where people are coming in but they feel comfortable to be able to tell you how they're going and talk, I think it's really important for their own growth and for their own perspective on how they're feeling. It's a real good process to unpack. So again, like whether the stories are true or not, they're true to the person, but I think it's important for everyone to have a voice. Obviously with the Neighbourhood Centre and as a youth worker, I've got a huge focus on trying to open up avenues for youth to have a bit of a voice, whether it's we've got a huge process of rebuilding the community at the moment. A lot of people are in the same space. And there's a lot of people that could probably be considered voiceless in those processes. So I think for me, it's trying to open up avenues for youth to have a bit of a voice, to be able to talk, to feel like they're important, their opinions are valid. But it's important for everyone to be able to have a place where they can talk, especially in the community. For those who may not have someone around them to talk, or, you know, we're rural, so anyone rurally isolated or separated, especially during COVID with all these restrictions on, like, everyone's even more isolated now, I'd say. So so far this year, I think anyone who needed to talk has found a way to find, like, come into the Neighbourhood Centre, and they've popped in here and there. And whether, no matter what they've come in for, they've always started to talk about whatever's going on. And so I think it's been a really great way for people to unpack everything about how they're feeling from January to now.
So it hasn't been about necessarily creating a formal space, but it's been in those interactions with people who are doing ordinary things.
Yeah.
I know it's extraordinary times, but so as you said, like, just checking in, getting some paperwork done, and that sparks the opportunity for the
conversation. Yeah, I don't, like, a lot of the time I don't even know if people are coming in and they know they are going to have a conversation about how they're feeling or what's going on. But I don't know, I feel like neighbourhood centres and a lot of places around, it's not just us, but, like, these, if you create a safe place, I think those conversations happen. And the benefit, I think a lot, we all know benefits of being able to share your experience and have someone make you feel like that's a valid way to think, or, like Amanda said, that you're not alone in the way that you're thinking, you're feeling or thinking in the situation, or that you just do have a voice when it comes to what's going on in your world. So, yeah, I think our campfire is not one you got to stay at or be at any certain time or even know why you're at the campfire. But I think if you can make a campfire a safe place, then it really enables those conversations to flow, and, you know, there's so many good things that you can get out of it.
Yeah. So both of you, in somewhat opposite ways, said something about the same thing. You know, Amanda, you said, you know, the campfire's for everyone. And Errol, you spoke about the people whose voices don't get heard. So can we just unpack that a little bit? I mean, we hear this term, you know, the hard-to-reach group, and which is not a term that I think is often helpful, because often it's like we who are trying to do the reaching haven't got the right strategy or haven't come up with the right way. There are very few people who are complete hermits that don't want, I mean, that they exist and we've got to respect their right to live that way. But most people want some form of connection. So Amanda, how do you balance everyone's welcome, this is for anyone, to actually trying to somehow work at getting to those, to the unheard voices that Errol talked about?
Yeah, look, I think when we talk about hard to reach, it's hard to reach for me. You know, they're not necessarily, they may not see themselves as hard to reach. They're there and living their lives. And it's about, like I said, we all, even the people who are gathering the stories, bring their own worldview and their own experience to it. So it may be that I've never thought about a group of people because I've never had that experience with them. So, you know, or I've heard about them but have no experience. So therefore, in my eyes, they might be hard to reach. Yet, so I guess that's why having conversations like this and hearing stories then open up, oh, I never thought of it like that. Ah, okay. Then we should go down that path and find out more about that particular person or group of people or people with experience in that way. And that opens it up and then brings them in. So it's really... I guess we're all, well, I'll speak for myself. I guess, you know, living in the world, you live from your own experience. And so it's the reaching out to people and opening up your vision and your hearing to see and hear different ways of, that people live in the world and then inviting them in. So I guess that's what I mean by everyone's welcome in this. It's like it may appear that we're just looking for stories about X, but in fact what we're asking is people's experience in this moment, and that includes anybody who is experiencing this moment. So, yeah, I think that it's about adjusting your interaction with the world to invite as many people in as possible.
Errol, how do you try to find or hear those voiceless or bring those people to some form of connection that enables them to be able to express something of themselves?
That's a tricky question. I don't even know if I have the answer for you. But I think, look, it's important to have a bit of an idea of where you might, where people might feel voiceless. And like, you know, for me, I think it's again, it's just creating an environment where I think it's okay to have an opinion. And you feel safe to build that opinion and your values and have that conversation. So with young people, it can be hard to create that sort of situation where they feel comfortable. We do it in lots of different ways. And I think I try and attract sneakily demographics of different things. Like we run different events shaped for different people, for Dungeons and Dragons, for people who like indoors and indoor stuff, video games, that sort of thing, to snowboarding. I guess I've always used the situation as an opportunity to start those conversations. Corryong's a good one because anything I run, I usually have to take a busload of people for a long trip. So a lot of talking done in a bus, and you can reach out to a lot of people. But the neighbourhood centre is great for it too. People have to come in for all sorts of different things. You know, today I've done 3 gun licences, just taking photos for gun licences. And you can ask someone how they're going during that. They might not have talked to someone that day. And you can ask them, how's it going? How's it going on the farm? How's the fencing going? Like, and do general things like that. So, yeah, I don't know if I have a specific answer, but I think if you try and create as many situations as you can where a conversation can happen and it's a safe place, I think people can sometimes find their voices. And you know, I think especially for young people, for the first half of this year, a lot of them have been working and building farms or been out on their properties, helping their parents out. And then school's been really limited, and then they're back at home without that. So social media is a huge one. It can be really great to just open up channels for people to actually have a voice, even if it's social media is not limited to just talking. It's pictures, it's videos, it's all sorts of stuff. It's, you know, just giving someone the thumbs up on an opinion. backing each other up like that. So I think, yeah, it's just creating as many situations as you can for people to feel safe.
Sound like a lot of them were side by side. So stuff where you're not looking face to face and doing that, you know, how are you?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like doing other stuff.
Yeah. Like, for example, we play, during COVID, one of the activities we've managed to keep going is Dungeons and Dragons. I don't know if anyone's familiar with it. It involves a lot of talking and a lot of creativity. And I know a lot of the conversation is talking about fireballs or killing that goblin or whatever, but while you're sitting around in that and people start to feel more comfortable, you can see there might just be a one-on-one conversation with someone next to you or someone across the road or a quick comment. But I think it's just that environment makes people feel like they can say anything they want. It doesn't have to be the Dungeons and Dragons. So, and I've always found, especially with young people, an activity is way easier to create that conversation rather than sitting down in like a figurative campfire and, you know, like it's...
It's a focus group to
talk. Right.
How to make them smile.
That's exactly right. You can have big conversations anywhere. I've had some of the best conversations at skate parks, at skate competitions with youth and Dungeons and Dragons or at the couch playing PlayStation. Those little opportunities all have a place for that conversation to happen.
Yeah. If anyone wants to contribute to the conversation in any way or pose a question to Amanda and Errol, don't hesitate to either wave or put a comment in the chat box. And we can work through. Jenny manages, Jenny's on that side of my screen. So she manages the chat box as well. So we'd certainly be very pleased to have people contribute. Amanda, you spoke about hearing stories, and one of the things that I've always been interested in is that often the stories we hear shape the stories that we're permitted to tell. So it's like you have an experience and then you tell a story about it. It's only because a storyline exists sometimes can you actually structure your experience. The classic one is the 12-step program, you know, the stories that people tell in those 12-step circles are very structured. You know, my name is Kathleen Brasher, I was an alcoholic, and this is why I was an alcoholic and now I'm not. And for some people that doesn't work because the structure of the story doesn't fit their experience. So how do you enable those different stories to be heard in a group that says this is the story we share?
I think there's always parameters that you have when you're sharing stories. Even as Errol was saying, you know, we're in a bus and we're going somewhere. So, you know, the conversation sits in this space and in this time and in this moment. And so even that's just a parameter. You could be talking about 100 different things, but you've got a limited amount of time, you've got a space, you've got an audience, people that you're talking with. So you're probably not going to be in that bus with somebody that is absolutely completely out of your sphere. And so you're going to have something common somewhere in there. So I guess... Again, it's about the intention, and to have people be able to give the story in the way that suits them and the structure that suits them, I guess, is to ask open-ended questions, to ask for people's opinion, not the facts, to open it out for them so that when they start going from you know, my name's Amanda Kelly and I'm an alcoholic, you know, then it's just, then you start to tell the story of it. And that might open up into my experience of traveling overseas and my experience of going somewhere else and what happened there and an interaction I had with a person. And this is what I value. You know, so it's opening it up as much as possible, knowing that there are parameters that you've got, which is time and space and this moment that you're telling it. Because I think what can happen is, I mean, stories change, you know, because as we grow and or as we age, as we move on, we feel differently and we see things differently and we have different perspectives. So the story that I told, you know, about my school experience when I was 16 is completely different from my school experience looking back, you know, 10 years.
Yeah.
Not that long. But, you know, it's just a, so yeah, so there's allowing for growth and change in that. And just even in the storytelling in the moment, I think is a really important way so that people feel their individual experience has been heard.
Mm. And Errol, adolescence is often a marked time when, you know, for some of us, it's sort of an exquisitely painful time. And some of that is trying to take that dominant story of the group we're with. And if we're different to that, either on the basis of our sexuality or our parenting or, you know, whole things painfully not part of the group. How do young people manage to tell a different story and still feel connected to their group?
Yeah, like, and that's again another tricky question. I'm glad actually Amanda got that one first. how do you make sure that someone who has a differing opinion to the rest of the group, or maybe not the same point, feel comfortable enough to express that? I was actually talking to my little sisters yesterday. They're 10 and 12 years younger than me, in their early 20s. And we're talking about the protests and the Black Lives Matter campaign and think that what's going on in America and around the world at the moment. And they were really quiet about it because of that very reason. They didn't know if their opinion was valid or not. And they had talked to a few people and I think they'd met with a lot of resistance on different things in that area. So they were saying, am I wrong to think like this, or am I wrong to have this opinion, or, you know, should I say that sort of thing? And I really encouraged them to do it. I was like, yeah, of course. But I was wondering why they didn't feel comfortable to talk about it, even with me, who I think they'd probably feel comfortable talking about a lot of things to. And I think it's because the environment that they were in, and when they mentioned whatever viewpoints they had, they felt like they had a bad viewpoint or a negative viewpoint on the situation, which I don't think is ever the case. I think they just needed someone to bounce their ideas and perspective off. So it's their way of growing and their way of like figuring out what they actually do think. So I guess sometimes I set groups up with like a plan for that. Like if there's a new person coming to a group or coming in, it's not a silly idea sometimes to sit down with the group who are already a huge, like a lot of these guys are really established as social groups and friends. And if there is someone new to town or just new to the area or new to that activity, we come up with a bit of a game plan on how to create an environment where they feel welcome or accepting. And, you know, it doesn't always work, but, like, we try everything you can to make it a safe place. Dungeons and Dragons can be very intimidating to some people, to bring back that example. So, you know, you sort of talk before, you get everyone together before you have that meeting and sort of say, well, how can we make this person feel comfortable? You know, how can we make them bring them into it? And I guess like the neighborhood center, we've always maintained that we treat everyone the same way. We treat everyone as if their opinions and that what they've come in for is valid, no matter what it is, even if it's out of the realm of neighbourhood centre duties. But yeah, again, I think it's like a lot of things. I think it's just creating an environment where people feel safe to be themselves and open. And when they do discuss their viewpoints, even if it is different to what everyone else is thinking, they can at least have someone talk to them about it without having to be on the defense straight away or having to feel like that they're wrong for thinking like that.
Kathleen, Jess has got an interesting observation around comfort.
Hey, Jess. Do you want to unmute yourself, Jess? And
Jess, I may have mucked up your unmuting then, so you might have to have another go at it.
There we go.
Saying that if I'm seeking out someone's story, that I should be the one uncomfortable, and that if you're trying to get someone's story and it's not something that's presented to you, that they should be comfortable at the way they're telling their story, and it's me that needs to be the uncomfortable one as a respect to their story. I mean, I think we sometimes forget that, and when we're trying to gather stories, we expect people to come to us to tell us, but going back to them and being comfortable with them in their space is really important to get the whole story.
Mm-hmm. So it's that listening in a way that doesn't expect a fully formed story, and for the listener not to be in the position of authority, for want of a better word, that's not what I mean, but to be in the sort of command position, if you like.
Yeah.
Jen, any other comments?
Tony actually made a comment earlier around you know, this is actually a campfire we have here. He says this is a bit of a campfire. Tony, did you want to expand on that?
Yeah, my extension, and thanks for the opportunity to be around the fire with you guys. I've enjoyed these last few weeks. What I actually wrote about was the experience, and the image that came to mind was in the old days, people carrying fire from one spot to the other when they set up a campfire at night, because fire was not always easily created. And it's the fire that we carry, I found, in COVID, as we move about, not in our daily activities of shopping, whatever, but just around the neighbourhood. Met all these people that I've never known before, and these spontaneous conversations. And that's been the wonderful and enriching experience. Including with, you know, a couple of neighbours who live opposite and we know them really well, but whole other dimensions of their life are coming out because, you know, a couple of their older sons have moved back in, and you discover a whole world of mental health issues that are happening. And so it's just been wonderful to share those journeys, not always around the campfire, but as we move around the community we live in.
Yeah. I think that has been one of the interesting things, isn't it, is that we're now, COVID has made us live more locally, so, which for some of us has been a benefit, and for others, again, it's like my horizons are now too small, or I don't relate to the people here, and how do I move back? So, but I think many people have had that experience of actually going, gee, this is where I live. There are some good people here too. So thanks for that.
Kathleen, I was just thinking about that. One of the things that I've had discussions with people online around these things are, this is actually, even though we're sitting, you know, kilometres apart, actually you're in my house right now, and I'm in many of your houses as well. And it's actually quite intimate, this different way of talking and interacting with people. You know, as you say, there's that intimacy of now, oh, okay, my neighbourhood, and I'm getting to know people. I'm the same Tony. I've, you know, met some neighbours that I had not met before, and recognised some of the people on the walking path now, which I hadn't you know, hadn't met. But we've also got this other intimacy now of being in each other's homes and also offices as well. You know, there's a space where we spend a lot of time. And so some of you are sitting in your office, and I may not have ever come to your office, but now I have. Mm-hmm. And one observation that was made, you know, one group of people I was talking to, one of them said, you know, I know more about you. In this case, they'd known each other for years through work. And they said, I know more about you now in the last few months. You know, I've met your dog. I've, you know, met your rabbits. I've, you know, your kids are there. You know, I've seen your husband or wife walking past. You know, your kids have popped up and bombed the Zoom session, you know, like, so there's just something different about this way of communicating now.
And I've heard from friends that have got teenage children that in fact it's been a time where they've watched their children blossom away from the pressure of perfect Instagram photos and needing to be out in a particular way in the world. So Errol, does a virtual campfire help young people?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think any sort of platform, like the more platforms people can speak on, the better. With the social platforms and media has been the only way I've actually been able to connect for like the last 5 or 6 months with youth in town. You know, my usual outlets like the skate park and the street, youth space, they're all closed up until this week. So how do we keep the youth groups that connected and talking? And the internet's been by far the best way to do it. Ironically, heaps of the activities we started for screen-free Sundays where we didn't want any screen have all turned into screen activities. But I think it's absolutely an awesome way for people to connect. Especially youth, they're a modern generation. They're used to talking on screens. You know, like a lot of them FaceTime instead of calling. A lot of them do things like through that. Absolutely. Social media has been great. It always comes with, I guess, issues, but everything does. It's been honestly one of the only ways I've managed to stay connected to youth. Especially in an area where everyone's so spread out and are stuck where they're spread out to. Mm-hmm.
When we hear these stories, Ursula Le Guin talks about bearing witness to the stories, but what's our responsibility with them from then?
I'll take this one straight away, Amanda. There's lots that you can get out of a conversation. You can validate someone's feelings. You can help them develop their perspectives and what they're feeling about and help them grow about what they're feeling. But also, if you're in a position, which I am, to act upon it, it's also important to do that. And I think it's part of showing that you've heard what's being said. So I think for me, if you hear these stories, some of it you don't have to pass on, and some of it is only intended for 5 minutes just to get something off your chest or to talk about. But some things bring up bigger issues. And I think if you can pass on those messages and pass on those stories to the right people, like especially at the moment we're doing a lot of bushfire recovery, and not everyone's on a committee or not everyone wants to be on a committee, but I think everyone has like a lot of good ideas. So if I'm on most of the committees for that now, and I think like if I hear something that's important, I got to jot it down and at least try and bring it up. Like I'm a big advocate for the youth voice in all this sort of all this area. So I think like for those guys, if they have ideas, it's to let them know, yeah, good story, and people do want to hear it. It's important people hear it. So I guess if you can act on it and help out and help spread what they're talking about, which is a big part of what's going on at the moment in the world. I think everyone wants to know what's going on, you know, like to feel what they're feeling and to feel what's going on in the world. So if you can be a part of the solution, part of the you know, the process to help, then I think that's the next step.
True. Amanda, what's your responsibility with the stories? I know you're collecting some online where people are formally constructing. I would call that a narrative, just because that's my theory brain stepping in. There's a difference between a story and a narrative. So you're getting quite a structured narrative and people are giving you permission to use that. But if we're in that campfire, people say all sorts of things, don't they? And particularly sometimes in that side-by-side interaction where you can slip into a conversation that you surprise yourself by being more honest and hearing yourself be more honest than you have. So where does your work take you in that space? Where do you sit with that?
What's your responsibility? So, yeah, I guess there's the personal responsibility to listen and to acknowledge and to affirm. And then there's, as you say, in my professional capacity, I guess there's the, there's ensuring that that all the stories, whether they're within my understanding or not, or my experience or not, it is to listen to them and to bring them together. And I think again, in the responsibility is to be able to say, okay, I have many stories, and there's a range of things that are happening here. And yet there's a theme through here. Each person's different. However, here's a theme. And, you know, one of the things that I can make a really concrete example of is we talk about flexible working environments. And in many people's minds, that benefits women. However, what I've noticed is I've been on talking with a lot of men in their professional capacity as well. And some of the threads of the stories I've got is, gee, it's really nice to actually have a bit more time with the kids. And I'm, you know, really enjoying being at home. And we go on bike rides at the end of the day together, which I was never able to do before. And it's been really good to have more, you know, this is not an ongoing thing, but they've, you know, there's guys have been saying, yeah, it's been really good working with kids in schooling and activities. So, hearing that is to say, well, part of my responsibility with that story is to hear what everyone in the community is saying and then go forward and go, well, you know what? Flexible working environments benefit everybody. This is something we can advocate for. So there's something very concrete to do with it. And if it's not something that is something that we can advocate for example, it might be something that I then share with Errol or with someone else or with Tony or and say, hey, I've been hearing this. Is this something in your experience that you've heard, or is this useful in your work? How might you be able to use these stories and this theme that I'm hearing? So it's the responsibility is to listen, affirm, and then bring all the experiences together and be able to move and on them.
Okay.
Trisha's got an observation to make around the responsibility of what we do with people's stories.
Hi everyone, it's Trisha. We've been running a strategic planning process, and because of COVID we went online more, and we've just been really amazed, and we've gotten a lot of information from women with experience of family violence who've kind of joined us through that we wouldn't have probably spoken with around our particular campfire in other processes. And it's kind of brought up for me again the sorts of things that Errol and Amanda and also Maria on the chat was talking about. It's just, once you get the story, how do you stay true to it without identifying the person when you talk about it? How do you keep confidentiality, especially in small communities like, you know, Errol would find in Corryong all the time? How do you do that well? And at the same time, kind of take it further so that you are using it to kind of shape things. And how do you then take the information back to people? In what kind of shape can you do that so that people feel that it's worth telling their story not only once, but perhaps being involved ongoing. Because quite a few of the women have said to us, we want a copy of the final plan and we'd like to be involved in further work like this. So it can be a validating, but it also can be that kind of next step of, well, I can do something with my experience to help others. So we've found it's fitted all those sorts of things, and stories are like that, aren't they?
Yeah. So how do you, Amanda and Errol, how do you take it back to the original storyteller, given that it will have changed its shape in the translating and meeting up with other stories, being able to be told? You know, I think of the bushfire recovery work, you know, it isn't just a simple thing of one story making a difference and coming back again.
Do you want to? You're happy for me, Errol? Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I guess in again around our professionally, what we're doing is similar to Tricia. So a lot of the stories that we're gathering, many of them are anonymous. So we haven't asked people to give us their information. So we may not be able to go back specifically to that person and say, we've used your story in this way. But what we are doing is using these stories to inform a couple of things. One is our strategic planning for the next it'll be 4 years. And so there will be a strategic document, there will be information, we'll be talking about how we got to where this strategy is. The other thing that we're doing is using it in our advocacy work. So already we've actually used a couple of the stories to tell the federal government what we think about their response to COVID-19. So a couple of stories are already there sitting on Parliament's desk. So I think it's about being visible and transparent about how you are using those stories. It may not always connect up for people, but I guess the best we can do with that is to give them the context of how we got there and say, this is what we're going to do and this is what you will see at the end.
Yeah, I think absolutely, Amanda, and got it in a nutshell there really, but I think the big word was being transparent about what you do with the stories and how you implement them. Like, again, there's some stories that aren't intended for sharing, and then there's some that are really good perspectives of how the community are and like about that need to be brought in there. And I guess like if the listener or the people telling those stories want that to be spread out there, it's part of the process is showing them how you can use that story, or asking them, do you mind if I take this to this group, or do you mind if I share this with these people? I think they could really use that information to change things. But I think absolutely, and the word of the day would be transparency on a lot of that.
When do we not share the story but give somebody a microphone? Not our responsibility or even our place to share it, but to actually say to somebody else, I really want to support you telling this story. You need to be heard. Or
Yeah. And some people are much better at telling their own story. Like in most cases, most people are better at telling their own story. It's given them, I guess, the platform to do it. I know for the bushfire recovery committee has a ton of working groups that are around the area, and those working groups are starting to talk about where the money, how the money's going to be invested into the area and what can be done. So I know there was a lot of people in each community that didn't actually, they had stories to tell, but they only felt comfortable telling one or two people about it, and they didn't know how to implement that story into the rest of the world. And you know, I think I've encouraged them to tell their story to someone, and then finding people in the community that listen to those stories and can relay those things on. Mm-hmm. For Taowong, for instance, they've during the bushfires especially been really tight-knit. Like they've done all their evacuation plans together, they've fought the fire through the mountain together, they've rebuilt the community together. a lot of the people in that don't shy away from being part of community groups and things like that. They want to be out on the field working, or they want to like just do things like that. But they've lived it, and they have these stories that are like super important for everyone to hear. So I think like if that you have people that don't necessarily want to be in there or have their story told by themselves, it's given them pathways to be able to get that story into those organisations and areas where it can be really helpful.
We've just got a few minutes left, so I want to do a couple of things. I need to ask you to do your one word or two word or three word feedback for Jenny into the chat function about how you found the event today. Jenny's also asked if we can take a screenshot, so if people are happy to be part of that, if they can turn their videos on so that we can, I know, so that we can take a screenshot, that would be fantastic. And if you don't want to be in it, then by all means, we'll let you know when we're about to take it and you can drop off. Next week, we have Jackie Eckert and Mark Ashcroft talking about how for the first time we've put health ahead of the economy and preventative health at that. So what does that mean for the way we think about health now, and how does the health sector respond in a post-COVID world? So Amanda and Errol, it's been a fascinating conversation. It's gone so fast. I look at the time and I think, crumbs, I'm only just starting to ask stuff. It's been really interesting, and I thank you both. It's been a really good conversation. So just any final thoughts, anything you'd like to say about our campfire?
Just a big thanks for having the opportunity to talk to you guys. There's some familiar faces in the lineup here, and some new faces too. So it was just great to talk to you all. Thanks for the nice messages in the chat on the side there to everyone. Thank you.
Sarah, Amanda.
Thank you for the invitation to the campfire. It's lovely. And it's really nice to see familiar faces and see some new people as well. And I guess I just encourage people to tell your stories. Speak up and, you know, in whatever format's comfortable for you. But everyone's story is really important, and it's really important to say it. So thank you, everyone.
Terrific. So I think Naomi is in charge of photography over in
there. It is. Certainly not me.
For me. So if people are happy to now pop their videos on briefly, that would be really helpful for Naomi. And this is for your newsletter, is that right? We're not talking about a mass media. We're not going viral.
Oh, well, we would hope our newsletter may go viral, but chances are it won't. So it is just our newsletter.
Terrific. Thanks, everyone. And we'll wait. Is that done, Naomi? Fantastic. So we'll see you all next week. Thank you very much for being part of it. Take care.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.